As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome into another edition of the Athletic Baseball Show. As always, we're presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. We actually have a question about Topps baseball cards. We'll get to that later in the show. I'm Tim McMaster, along with Ken Rosenthal. We're answering your questions in the Monday mailbag. We do it every week. Thanks for checking us out. If you like the show, please subscribe, give us a five-star rating, all that good stuff. Ken, how are you doing?
Doing well, Tim. How are you?
I am good, and it's kind of been a crazy week in baseball in the East. So that's where we're going to start before we open up the mailbag. You look at the American League East and the Red Sox suddenly in free fall mode, basically. Coming into today, we're recording this on Sunday, they've lost 8 of 10. The Rays suddenly right now have a 3-game lead. It's the Yankees that are red hot with 5 straight wins. They're going to be without Anthony Rizzo for a little bit as he tests positive for COVID-19 over the weekend. Lots going on there, but you spent your weekend more focused on the National League East. You were on the Mets-Phillies game in Philadelphia on Saturday night. The Phillies have won 7 in a row, and suddenly they're in first place, Ken.
It's rather amazing, Tim, but I go back to a tweet I sent out on July 15th, and I'll give you the context of this as we go along. I'll explain it. At that time, the Phillies were 3.5 back, the Braves were 4 back. There was some question whether either team would actually buy because they were below 500. Neither was playing particularly well. And I tweeted at the time, the Braves aren't selling, not when the Mets have failed to build a significant lead in the NL East. And then I explained it a little bit further. Mets fans went crazy. How dare you say we failed to build a significant lead? We've had all these injuries, which was true. But the reality was, at the time, the way the Braves saw the division, the way the Phillies saw the division, was the Mets are beatable. The Mets are vulnerable. We can get them. And now, without DeGrom and Lindor, that holds true as it did then. So what those two teams did was buy. We saw the Phillies add Gibson and Kennedy, Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy, one piece for their rotation, one for their bullpen, as well as Freddie Galvis for infield depth. The Braves started with Jock Peterson, then kept adding outfielders, Soler and Duval and Rosario, and also added the reliever Richard Rodriguez. And now suddenly we have a real legitimate race. And Tim, you mentioned it, the Phillies are playing better. They remain a difficult watch. Defensively, they are not good. Their bullpen can be hair-raising, to say the least, but they have a good offense, and it's been showing of late. The Braves, clearly, Soler was a great addition, and the other pieces have added as well. Their bullpen has stabilized some. So we have those two teams that are playing better. They're not flawless by any stretch of the imagination, but the Mets can't hit. The Mets are 29th in the major leagues in runs scored, ahead of only the Pirates. That's astonishing. And when I say runs scored, I mean runs per game. We have seen them struggle with injuries, no doubt. They've lost a lot of key players at different times, Lindor, of course, being the latest. And yes, Citi Field plays a role in all this. It's one of the worst run-scoring environments in the major leagues, and for whatever reason, that is harming the Mets as well. But all that said, they've got a top 10 chase rate, and that's not a good thing. It means that they're one of the 10 leading teams in chasing pitches outside the strike zone. Their average exit velocity is something like fourth, lowest. They're just not putting it together offensively. And Alonso, the one guy who had been good, is struggling in August. So they added Baez at the deadline. They didn't address their starting pitching meaningfully. They had acquired Rich Hill. Then they acquired Trevor Williams in the Baez trade. But they just seem like a really flawed team. Now, are they capable of turning it on? Absolutely. Especially if they get Lindor and DeGrom back, no question. But right now, this is a three-team race and a really good one.
When you look at the two divisions, the American League East and the National League East, the cool difference in these and the way you approach them and see them here down the stretch is, in the National League, one of those teams is getting in the playoffs. That's it. In the American League, one, probably two, and possibly three of those teams, with the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Rays, even the Blue Jays kind of in the hunt, could get in. So it's a very different dynamic when you look at those two divisions, even though they're tightening up, obviously.
Right, Tim. And that, of course, is because of the prominence of the NL West contenders, the three really good teams that exist there, the Giants, Dodgers, and Padres. Now, the AL East, it's a little bit different than the NL East in the way it has evolved. These clearly are better teams, I would say. But the Red Sox, you can look at them and see a team that didn't do all that much at the deadline. They got outflanked for Rizzo by the Yankees, if they were ever really in. They end up with Schwarber, who is hurt right now, and when he comes back, will have to play an unfamiliar position to him, first base. They added two kind of fringy relievers. So that's a team that was struggling at the time, didn't really do much, and it's showing. Now, they're going to get Sale back. They put Tanner Houck in the rotation. Better. But at the same time, you wonder if they missed an opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see how it all plays out. All right, let's get into the mailbag.
Hey, this is Ken.
I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
If you want to get involved in the mailbag next week, you can. You can do it with your voice. Call in the voicemail, 646-543-7072. You can also email us, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. Lots of big picture questions this week, kind of all over the place. It's a bit of a potpourri mailbag, so we'll get right into it, Ken. And the first one is specific to your career, actually. It's from Alex Clark. He says, "Hi, Ken. Sorry for emailing rather than leaving a message, but I live in the UK, so that's kind of tough for me. My question is, where's the strangest place where you have ever heard a trade breaking from? Could be the deadline, could be the off season. Thanks for the time."
It's a great question. And actually, Alex, I don't really hang out in strange places. So it's not like I've ever been in a club and I got a tip or somewhere else. The two I can remember that were maybe a little different, and it's not going to be all that exciting, I'm sorry. One was the Johnny Cueto trade in 2015 when he went to the Royals. And what I remember about that is that it was a Sunday, I believe July 26th. The deadline was a few days away, but this was hot. And I was boarding a plane. We must have had a broadcast the night before, and I'm getting on a plane. And you know what happens. The door is shut. The flight attendants say, "Off with the phones." And this thing is coming. I can feel it. I've got it. I'm close. I've got one more source I've got to get, and then I can report it. Well, naturally, the flight attendant is browbeating me and kind of talking to me and staring me down. And I'm not going to lose this story because of this ridiculous FAA regulation. So I got it just in time. As we're taking off, I believe the wheels were off the ground at the time I reported it, but that was one. The other one I remember, and this was funny, I actually had to check on it to refresh my memory. This was deadline day in 2016, and I was working out in a workout room in my apartment building. Why I was doing that on deadline day, I have no idea. Usually I would not be doing anything like that on deadline day, but it was 8:30 in the morning, and it was a Sunday. And I got a text, Andrew Miller to Cleveland, from someone I trust, and I was stunned by this. It was the Yankees had traded Andrew Miller to Cleveland. That was, remember, the one deadline where they kind of deconstructed, retooled on the fly with Chapman going to the Cubs and then Miller to the Indians. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow. So I obviously aborted the workout and reported it, but those were two. Now, I know neither is a really strange place. One is an airplane, one is a workout room. But those are two I remember in that fashion. Now, there are some others that if I ever write a book, I will get to, because there are some cool stories, but I sort of can't reveal them until then. And that might not be for another 20 years. Who knows?
That's the ultimate tease. Teasing the book deal down the road. Good stuff.
That book is only going to be written if I ever stop doing what I'm doing. And that, I don't know. That's not happening. So we'll see if that book ever gets written.
All right. The next question comes from Chris Jenkins. He says, could there come a time when baseball will allow draft picks to be traded like the NFL and NHL?
Chris, I sure hope so. And this is something that really would help baseball and make the draft that much more meaningful in the eyes of fans. One thing I've always thought, and this is not simply because I'm a reporter, fans love the action of the deadline. They love the action of the winter meetings. Baseball should do things to enhance that action as much as it could. And trading draft picks would be one way. It would make the draft into an NFL-style bazaar, right? Where you had guys swapping things left and right. And also, as Jeff Passan pointed out on ESPN the other day, in the Kumar Rocker situation with the Mets, okay, the Mets don't want to sign Rocker. Well, you can trade him. Maybe another team is willing to take a chance on that medical that the Mets weren't. That's another thing that could result from trading of draft picks. And overall, if you want to enhance the flexibility of teams, for instance, you're the Pirates this year. Okay, you're holding the number one pick. And you're thinking, you know what? That number one pick is meaningful to our organization. But if, let's say, the Mariners want to give us two decent prospects for that number one pick, that's something that might be even more meaningful. And for the Mariners, maybe there's a guy that they've identified they want at that spot. This is just a hypothetical, not necessarily applying to this year because there was not an obvious number one like a Bryce Harper or a Steven Strasburg. But all of these scenarios would be in play, and I will hope and hold out hope that in the new collective bargaining agreement we see the trading of draft picks allowed.
It also just bring more attention to the draft, which is, I think, is something baseball would like to do for sure.
More so than just shifting it to the All-Star break and trying to build attention that way, which I don't know that it worked at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know either. Next question, this one from Sean. He says, hey, Ken, Mike Trout turned 30 on Saturday. He's positioned himself in the conversation for greatest player of all time. If he's able to continue doing what he's doing so far, do you think he needs to have postseason success to really be considered in that argument?
I don't. And the way we judge players generally is on their regular season accomplishments. Now, certainly there are players who have enhanced their profiles with their great postseasons, David Ortiz being one that comes to mind. And certainly there are players who, I wouldn't say have damaged their reputations, but maybe have raised questions when they haven't performed well in the postseason. Barry Bonds was one of those players until 2002 when he kind of ended all that talk. And I've always felt you give a player enough chances, he's going to succeed in the postseason. Give a great player enough chances. But when we look back at Trout's career, all right, if you want to say he shouldn't have signed the two extensions with the Angels and he should have gone free agent and gone to a better team, you can criticize him for that. But I don't know that that is necessarily a negative. And in his mind, he was comfortable playing with the Angels. He has always believed that they would build a better team. They just haven't. I just wouldn't hold that against him in an all-time great discussion. If he continues on his path, if he continues to be one of the best players, if not the best player of our generation, there's no way to say, well, he didn't do it in the postseason, because that's a team failure, not a Mike Trout failure.
Yeah, it's just different than like the NBA, where if you're a great player, your team is going to be good. You're one of five players on the court all the time and all that. It's just you have less of an impact in baseball. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show. All right, we have our first voicemail coming up. This one from Frank.
Hey, Ken. Frank here. Currently making my way through the great state of Nebraska with my father and wondering, why did MLB decide to forego the playoff format they used last year? Thanks a lot.
Frank, this came down to a negotiation between the Players Union and MLB. And they were unable to agree on the expanded postseason for this year. Now, the negotiation was baseball, MLB, wanting the expanded playoffs in exchange for granting the union the universal DH. The union thought, well, that's not enough of a give on MLB's part. The expanded playoffs are worth a lot more than the universal DH would be. And that's why it fell apart. Now, the fallout of that is we had the universal DH in 2020, we didn't have it in 21, and we likely will have it in the next CBA. So it's kind of ridiculous, three different seasons, three different rules in succession. As for the expanded playoffs, last year was obviously unusual, and to have the 16 teams in the playoffs, that was a result of the 60-game season, and MLB maybe trying to want to make up some money, create some more excitement, give more teams a chance because of the 60-game season. And it was fine for then. I would not be in favor of that particular format going forward because it did not reward the division winner, did not reward the best overall record. Any of those teams could have lost right away in that wild card round. Going forward, what has been discussed is a 14-team playoff, 7 in each league, in which some of those things I just mentioned, home field advantage for the division champion, penalizing the wild card, best overall record gets an edge, that will all be taken care of. I don't love it. I like the current format, but I understand why they would want to expand the playoffs, and I expect that in the new CBA, as part of the give and take that will take place, not just with the DH, but with all of the things going on, that the union will agree to expanded playoffs. But I will say that as of now, if you ask the union about this, they will say our players are mostly opposed to expanded playoffs. They believe it will further disincentivize competition, that it will be too easy to get into the playoffs. Teams won't spend money to get into the playoffs. You can look at it from the other side, too, and say, whoa, if you got a chance, more teams are going to spend. But that is how a lot of the players see it. Some union officials see it that way as well. So it's going to be a difficult sell in some regards, but I fully expect this can get done.
I mentioned Anthony Rizzo towards the beginning of the show. The next question revolves around that. He says, hey, Ken, can you see the Yankees extend this from Melvin? Can you see the Yankees extending Rizzo at the end of the year? And I also had a thought that instead of paying $300 million for a shortstop, why not sign Rizzo and sign Gallo to an extension for the same price as a shortstop? What are your thoughts?
Melvin, it's a good question, especially if the Yankees make the playoffs. Rizzo has a big role in them making the playoffs and then maybe does some big things in October. I can see them in that particular circumstance, yes, wanting to take a look at an extension. But remember what the Cubs thought when they offered Rizzo the $70 million deal that he thought was inadequate. They're thinking, okay, Anthony Rizzo, who just turned 32 on Sunday, would be 33 or turning 33 in the first season of that new deal. It would happen on August 8th. Older first basemen and extensions for older first basemen generally haven't worked out so great. And I'm not going to say that Rizzo is Miguel Cabrera or Albert Pujols. The deal wouldn't be as long. Goldschmidt is a guy that he does get compared to. And Goldschmidt's been okay for the Cardinals, but this isn't peak Paul Goldschmidt. And you're not going to get peak Anthony Rizzo from, say, ages 32 to 36. So I don't know that an extension for him would necessarily be the right move. And I do wonder how he'll do on the market. I do believe it depends upon how he finishes. I also think the Yankees do need a shortstop, a quality defensive shortstop. Gleyber Torres is a really good player who is not a really good shortstop, and they'd be better served with him at second, with LeMahieu at first, precluding any first baseman from being part of the Yankees' long-term view, and then going from there. And also, I don't believe that the four big shortstops, actually, let's make it five with Brandon Crawford. Any of the five, I don't know that any of them are getting $300 million. And I know Tatis did. I know Lindor did. But Javi Baez is having a Javi Baez season where he's productive in some regards, but in other regards, the strikeout rate is going to scare some clubs. Corey Seager's been hurt. I don't know that he's getting $300 million. He's got a history of injuries. Correa's had probably the best year of that group. Is he $300 million? I'm not sure. Trevor Story has had a down year. So maybe you get a shortstop for less than you would have thought you would have had to have paid when the season started. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Free agency can be very volatile, and certainly we have 7-8 weeks left in the season, so some of these players can really improve their value, enhance that value. But in my view, the Yankees still need a shortstop, and that is the way to go for them.
All right. The next one, also an email. This one comes from Brian. He's out in Seattle talking about West Coast baseball. What's the story with the Athletic Stadium situation, and what exactly are they asking the city to pay for? Building a new stadium would cost at least $1 billion, according to the A's. They have promised to privately finance the ballpark and mixed-use development that includes housing units, retail space, commercial office space, public green space, and more, but requested public money for, quote, certain expenses.
This one is really complicated. Right. And I don't know that I'm the person best equipped to answer it. But it sounds like, from what I've read and from what I understand talking to people about this, is that the A's want certain things that are not being offered by the city. And one of them is for the city to form two tax districts to pay for capital improvements that are needed to prepare the site, the Howard Terminal site, for planned development and to create better access as well. The city wants to get state and federal dollars for that, and that's one of the things they've been haggling over. Another thing is what percentage of the new housing that is going to be part of this development project would be affordable housing. There's an environmental impact report that has to be taken care of. Alameda County, which is the county where Oakland is, would have to be involved in some regard. The city has committed a certain amount to infrastructure, and that amount is, I believe, less than $1 billion, about $855 million, which is still a lot of money. And from what I can gather, the team simply wants a different kind of financial arrangement, obviously, and they're threatening to leave as a result if this arrangement is not met. Now, for a team to go out and promote itself for years as rooted in Oakland and then threaten to relocate when its demands or requests or however you want to describe them are not met, well, I don't know that that's rooted in Oakland. It seems to me this project is far enough along, and as our Marcus Thompson has written in The Athletic, and Marcus is a native of Oakland, this project is beneficial enough to the city that it should be something the city would want to work out. And it should be something the A's would want to work out, unless they really want to get out and go to Vegas. And if that's the case, as Marcus wrote, using one word, bye.
Okay, back to the collective bargaining agreement, Ken, for this next one. I'm not sure if that's great for listenership or not, but it's certainly going to be something we're going to continue to talk about as we go further. But this one, kind of an interesting twist, and it is there a chance in the new CBA that a player removed from a game or after the game ends is ejected, that player would then miss the next game? Joe Torre was on TV a while back. He said the arguments were getting out of hand, so a player leaving the game or after a game, managers too, know nothing can happen if they're ejected, making them miss the next game, would calm this down in his view and give more penalty, and therefore, I'm ad-libbing here a little bit on the question, but basically be more to stop this stuff from happening in the game.
Well, first of all, this is the kind of issue that can be addressed in a new collective bargaining agreement. The CBA sets the rules for the entire sport, and players and the owners can agree on virtually anything they want. And that's why it is so interesting, not just from a financial standpoint as we go forward and get ready for these negotiations to really heat up, but also from a playing standpoint. We talk about pace of play, pace of action, shifts and all this. The union has a say in all of these things, and I expect some of that to be addressed in the CBA. Now, the suggestion that the reader has is not one I've heard about a one-game ban for a player or manager who is ejected, and I'm not sure it's necessary. There are suspensions that occur as a result of these ejections sometimes. I just don't see that as a priority going forward. I know what you're saying about ending the arguments, and that would certainly perhaps give players and managers pause when they go out there. But at the same time, I just don't see this as being number 1, 2, 3, 30, 50, 100 on the list of priorities.
Yeah, there's plenty of priorities to get to and not that much time to do it in the offseason. The one sport where this happens all the time is that you think about is soccer, where if you get a red card, you miss the next game as well. But otherwise, it's not really a common thing, I don't think, across sports. You mentioned suspensions that can come from, you know, if it's something big that happens in the game, baseball can come through with that.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your son. Flower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
All right, the next question is back to voicemail.
Hey, Ken and Tim. This is Aaron from San Diego calling. I just have a question that I've never received a satisfactory answer to. Why does a runner have to give himself up to receive credit for a sacrifice bunt? Wouldn't it be more exciting to see them try to leg out the hit each time they lay it down? Plus, we never punish a hitter for hitting a sack fly when we all know they were really trying to hit the home run in the first place. And thanks for all your hard work. Appreciate what you guys do.
Aaron, I like the question, and as a fan of the sport myself, sometimes I think about these things and I say, why is this the way it is? Why can't it be otherwise? But in this case, with the sacrifice bunt, the hitter is giving himself up, right? It is a situation where he is trying to advance the runner strategically and willing to take the out in that particular situation. When a batter attempts to bunt for a hit and he's not simply trying to advance the runners, that's a different story, and that's why that counts as an at-bat. Now, that batter is free to try to bunt for a hit at any time, and if he does that and he gets the hit, more power to him. But that's an at-bat. Now, a sacrifice fly, we know, is not considered a time at-bat. It doesn't count against batting average, but it does count against on-base percentage. It counts as a plate appearance, and it will lower your on-base percentage. So the reason for that is that a sacrifice fly is not considered a tactical maneuver. You hit a fly ball, yeah, you might be trying to do that, but it's pretty hard to simply try to do that. You may hit a ground ball. Whereas with a sacrifice bunt, obviously you're trying to get the ball on the ground, advance the runners in that fashion. So that's the difference. You might say, Ken, that's not a sufficient answer. I understand, but that is the way I understand it.
Yeah, and that one's probably not changing anytime soon. We have one last question. It's from Seth Seeger, who says, hey guys, I've noticed that you've had Top sponsoring your show all season. Were you big into baseball cards growing up? And did you have a favorite design? Are you surprised cards are still popular today with everything in the world going digital and cards still going, I guess, digital and also still paper? Ken, let's keep this to Tops since they are our sponsor.
I was a baseball card collector and a pretty fervent one when I was a kid. I had an uncle, actually a great uncle, who owned a what they call a candy store. Now, they don't really have candy stores anymore, kind of a drugstore type situation. But in this candy store, he had a counter where you could buy lunch or drinks. He had toys available for purchase. He had baseball cards, newspapers, everything. So one of the great fond memories of my childhood would be going to his store and he'd give me a whole box of these cards. And yeah, I collected them pretty fervently. I don't know that I had a favorite design, but I had a favorite card. And this is pretty funny, actually. It goes back, and I don't remember the year, but there was a time when it was thought that the San Diego Padres were moving to Washington, D.C. I would guess this was early 70s. And Topps actually printed Washington Padre baseball cards. Now, they took them back quickly. I guess they only printed them maybe for a week before it all fell apart. But those cards were wildly popular, the Washington Padre cards, and very valuable at the time. And I had a Johnny Grubb Washington Padres card, very cherished card, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. So yeah, I was a collector big time, and I actually was an autograph collector too, and I would use cards to get signatures on and all that. So yes, I was totally into it, and I love it today, and it's really cool actually that Topps, for some of us, will make our own cards. I've got an MLB Network Ken Rosenthal card, I've got a Topps card, quite a few actually, and it's really a great thrill.
It seems like cards and the popularity of baseball cards come in waves, and we're back in kind of a new golden era of it, and they've stuck with the times because there is the digital side that Topps has done. This summer, we've of course talked plenty about it before these shows in the ad run about Project 70 and bringing in these great artists around and bringing them in to do this, to modernize these cards. So they've done a great job with that. My favorites, well, the cards that got me into when I was really becoming a baseball fan was the 1986 Topps, because growing up in Massachusetts, that was the year where, you know, the Red Sox were obviously great that year, going to the World Series before it ended badly, famously badly. But that card isn't really a classic in mind, the block print names at the top and the white and black. But the next year, when I was fully in on baseball cards, was the wood paneling Topps cards in 1987. And to this day, that's still my favorite. I love those wood paneling cards. All right, so thanks for that question. Baseball cards remain a great part of the game and all sports. It obviously started with baseball, but it's moved on to everything else as well. Thanks for your questions all week long as well. The voicemail, if you want to get involved for next week's show, it's 646-543-7072. The email, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. And if you didn't hear that, you can find it in the description of the show as well and find your way to the mailbag. Ken? Where are you headed next weekend?
Well, I have Field of Dreams this week, and that's Thursday. And I'm actually headed to Madison, Wisconsin on Tuesday, and driving down in a rental car to Iowa. And then next weekend from there, from the Thursday night game, I'll fly Friday to Philadelphia and do Phillies Reds. And the Phillies right now are exciting. The Reds certainly are exciting, so I'm looking forward to that one. Be a busy week.
Have you ever been to the Field of Dreams before they built the, you know, the ballpark they're going to be using this week? No?
I have not, Tim, and I can tell you everybody at Fox is so excited about this. And I think fans in general, it doesn't have to be fans of the White Sox and Yankees who are playing in the game, but fans in general are going to be interested in this because the movie means so much to so many people. And the connection between the father and son, the mother and daughters, and that element of it is just going to add something to this game that really we've not seen it. For instance, in the London game or the Fort Bragg game, there's this emotional thing with the Field of Dreams because of the movie. And my expectation is you'll see people other than pure baseball fans watching that game because of that. And again, we're just all really looking forward to it, and I can't wait. It's been 2 years in the making. Remember, it was supposed to take place last year, and it was postponed due to COVID-19, and now finally it's coming together.
It's going to be so cool visually with the cornfield, but then the uniforms. If you haven't seen the uniforms, check them out online. They're easy enough to find. But the White Sox basically wearing the Black Sox uniforms from 1919. And then you have the Yankees, which are more like their general uniforms, but still kind of old school with the grays and New York on the front. It's going to be a lot of fun. Stay with this show all week long. Of course, we give you the mailbag on Monday, but then Starkville is coming at you on Tuesday. Jason Stark and Doug Glanville on Thursday. It is Hunter Pence along with Grant Brisby. That show is a lot of fun, the Baseball Barista. And then Friday, it's Derek Van Riper and Keith Law. We're bringing you baseball all week long. And if you want to join The Athletic, you can right now. We have a deal going. You can save 33% off an annual subscription. Go to theathletic.com/baseball show. Ken, have a great week. Good luck with all the travels and enjoy Iowa.
Thanks, Tim.
All right. Have a great week to everybody else out there as well.